This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you're at in the U.S. and around the world. Thanks for joining us. Another episode, yes, of Baseball Outside the Box. And as you know, this is the show that loves to interview baseball's best coaching minds who love the challenge, the status quo. And we got a great one. And I know I say that every show, but I really believe that we really got some great shows. You're the one that's going to be the judge of it. Our audience, you guys are fantastic in the U.S., around the world. If you really love it, please go to YouTube. Hit the red button, the bell, subscribe, get the show out for us. That's all we ask. We don't ask anything else. Just get the show to anybody in the U.S., around the world, whether it be parents, players, coaches, in the game of baseball. Remember, all we're trying to do is help anybody in the game with the development of the sport and development long-term, not short-term. We're not looking for short-term fixes here. We're looking for long-term. That's the important thing. We want to keep kids in the game as long as possible. A couple of announcements real quick. Also, special announcement to my buddy, Mac Pachorik. He introduced us to our special guest today. Sad news, Joe Morgan passed away. Another Hall of Famer. I remember him as a kid. I was watching the Big Red Machine playing in the 1975 World Series with Pete Rose and the gang and Boston Red Sox. What a super individual. Condolences to the family. And last, Caliendo Sports International. Yes, we are going to try to travel to the Dominican Republic, Christmas break, 15, 16-year-olds, also 14-year-olds. We're going to train in the Dominican Republic. We don't train on the major league complexes. We train where the real Dominican players train. That's where the experience comes in. That's where you get a little bit uncomfortable, but start learning how to get comfortable. So we're going to be in the Dominican. If you're interested, email me, caliendo19@gmail.com. We have a few more spots left. We're looking for some good players. It is a great baseball cultural experience. All right, man, let's get started. Guest today, former major league player with the Philadelphia Phillies. He was a big league pitcher, so he's gone through the system. He was a multi-sport athlete. He's the owner of Performance for Athletes, that PFA, and you can go to pfabaseball.com, check that out. We'll put that on the show notes. And great thing we're going to introduce today, Pocket Path, a special technology that coach is working on that trains the arm path. This is unique because I've never heard anything about this or anything like it. So let me welcome our guest today from California, Dave Coggin. What's up, Dave?
Hey, man. Thanks. Appreciate it. Glad to be here with you guys.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure. And thank you to Mac Pachorik again. I love Mac, man. Great guy, great coach. I want to say, I'm looking at a new facility behind you. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I'm in here in Montclair, California, so just outside of Los Angeles in San Bernardino County. We just moved out of our old facility into a brand new one. We're putting everything into it. It's pretty empty behind me. We're up in the upstairs area, my brand new office. Finally got myself a corner office with windows. And downstairs is a bunch of racket. Hopefully you can't hear it, but there's painting going on, a new gym being put on, a studio. We're putting a brand new studio in for Pocket Path videos and all kinds of neat things that we're going to be doing down there. That's going to be really cool. A lot of stuff happening. We're excited about it.
Absolutely. Listen, before we get into Pocket Path and some other things about pitching, you know, because I know there's a lot of people that do pitching out there. I mean, there's all kinds of shows. And folks, just so you know, I see some people on Facebook. In case you want to see Dave, you're going to have to go to YouTube at Peter Caliendo. There you'll see both of us at live. If not, you're going to basically see me. I know you don't want to see me as much, but you actually get to listen to Dave. So you can hear Dave. Hey, let's just go back in history a little bit because, you know, you were obviously a young kid. You love baseball, but you were, interesting enough, you were a multi-sport athlete. And I ask this question to everybody because I found out that like over 96% of major league players were multi-sport athletes. And we're not talking baseball only, but others. So one, you know, as a kid, what did you do to, you know, what were you doing playing baseball to get better? And then how it helped you being a multi-sport athlete? Talk to our parents especially.
Right. Yeah, no, that is a big thing. And I was more than just a two-sport athlete. I was actually excelling in three sports and all the way through high school, soccer, football, and baseball. So I know that during, you know, the time of me playing soccer, that got me endurance training. It got me that never give up kind of attitude. It taught me how to cut off angles from being a defender to going against really top end high forwards. There's a lot of strategy involved with that. When it went to football, that was a little bit of a newer sport for me, although organized it was newer, but I was playing it all the time when I was younger in streets and any park that was available. Then baseball kind of was the, you know, the almost vacation of it all, really, because football made it, you know, you toughened up and you got used to coaches who were in your face and being, you know, demanding a ton from you and you having to just suck it up and do it, and long hours of training. And yeah, baseball was just kind of like, oh, it's at the end of the year. And it's kind of a, now I can just I could just relax and just play and use my instincts and my strengths that I was getting from the other sports. I understand it is harder and harder nowadays as you get older, but I had a conversation with a parent actually this morning about their son who was a soccer player, and he was the top soccer player for his freshman sophomore year, and he was a really good baseball player, and the coaches in high school told him he needed to give up soccer to pursue baseball because he was going to be really great at it. And this was a kid that was going to be great at both of them easily all the way through. And it just kind of brings me back to it's coaches who are telling you that probably weren't multi-sport athletes most of the time. That's what I've noticed a lot when coaches pressure, especially from baseball side of it, they pressure kids into not playing another sport and just playing with them. And in the travel ball world, it's such a business nowadays. And even in high school, it's a business. You know, you want your kids around all the time because you're either collecting dues or fees and spirit packs and fall pack and spring pack and winter pack and summer pack. So there's a ton of money involved. And sometimes when that happens, things can get a little bit distorted. And it's not to say that those things are travel ball is bad or high school is bad. It just means that there has to be some sort of flexibility to be able to allow an athlete who can do both to actually keep doing both and not be worried if you're not going to have your best player for a certain part of the season. That might not matter too much to the baseball side, but might matter a lot to him in the other sports season.
Yeah, and I agree. You know, there's a balance there. And the reason we do the show, one of the reasons is, yes, we feel that you need to educate three areas, players, parents, and coaches. And that's what it's about. It's about education, because sometimes, you know, some people mean really well, but they just don't know. And we really stress, you know, look, when they're all the way to about 13, 14 years old, let them play all kinds of sports. Nobody says you have to play football, but other sport, hockey can make it tough. Other sports can make it tough. I wish I had that. And I know that was definitely a detriment in my career, you know, and pursue my career even higher, because I think I would have been tougher if I would have had other sports involved. Dave, the other thing is I want to ask you, it's interesting, you know, as a formerly major league player, before we get into all the details, if you had to go back now and everything you know now, and especially in pitching, because you were a major league pitcher, and you had to change some things, because that could fast track some other people and helping them understand how to get to higher levels quicker, what would you change in your, whether it be delivery, mentality, anything?
Yeah, ironically, it's going to be, well, that's something I think about all the time. And I actually bring this up often when I'm doing an eval or I'm doing a clinic with new athletes. And I'm telling people, I'm like, hey, listen, I got to the major leagues. That should, you know, all right, tell you that, oh, I must know everything that he is going to tell me is going to help me get to the big leagues. Well, I'm also the first person to tell you that if I could do things over, I would change certain things. And it wouldn't have been my work ethic. It wouldn't have been my intent or my aggressiveness. Those things I was really good at, just from, again, going back to playing multiple sports, playing football and these other sports, those things were built and ingrained in me. But when I look back at the different parts of my delivery, I can see things that I was doing that I didn't need to do. And that was putting stress on my shoulders. And that's really what ended my career, was my shoulder injuries, my second surgery. And now I can see, watching a video, and go, man, if I was working with that kid, and that being me, I would have a few things that I know would make an instant difference on him. And it wasn't because I was taught wrong. It was just because I was going over intent over movement. And when you get too much intent over movement, you can muscle through things if you're really physically gifted and you're a superstar athlete, but it doesn't have a long shelf life. So Nowadays, I would say to learn how to move more efficiently. And in the 10 plus years of kind of doing this on this side, the one thing that kept coming up to me when I was seeing guys who did have long careers was how their arm path sequenced up and how their sequence of their arm path matched up with the, where their hips were and where their body positioning was. And that was a huge kind of light bulb moment in the way I teach. And once I started teaching from that part of the chain and then checking that off the box, the arm path, and getting rid of wasted movement or tension or stabbing or early rising of the hand, ball dominant stuff that we'll talk about later, then that made everything down the road easier. It's as simple as making a shortstop into a pitcher is a lot easier than making an outfielder or a non-athlete PO who's got all kinds of movement issues into a pitcher. So that's kind of where it all kind of started, and it's helped me immensely, and I wish I was had a little more awareness of that when I was playing.
You know, it's interesting because I listened to you talk in a couple episodes, other shows, and you talk about the shortstop, you know, becoming a pitcher, and then it kind of clicked because you look at it and say, yeah, they got to throw real quick. You know, they gotta be perfect, you know, and they got to get it online, and there's no wasted motion. So here's what I want to get to, because let's get into that. I'm watching Max Fried last night with the Braves. I called him, unfortunately, Fryer, but I don't feel so bad because I'm watching TBS and Big Poppy called them Fried. So, you know, I guess we all messed up his name, but it's Max Fried, so I want to apologize to Max. And, you know, they showed an interesting thing. Same release point, at least consistent release point. And then obviously it's hard to pick up the different pitches from those release points. I know you're big on this arm path being proper. Giolito might be another example of that changed his arm path. Talk a little bit about why the arm path. Do you start with the arm path, or is it more important to make sure that your movements are perfect or very good before you change the arm path?
Right. So that I played with a lot when I was just starting this, you know, quite some time ago. And I noticed that when I had an arm path that didn't have a lot of extra stuff in it, length meaning or tension or ball dominant means that the ball is being aggressive and uncontrolled. So it's creating momentum that the elbow and arm have to try to kind of figure out how to get back to the position. So the shortstops didn't actually have that. They just kind of took the ball. The ball really just followed a pattern. It didn't really lead the pattern. So it was kind of like a end of a whip. It was the last thing to come through. It wasn't the first thing to come through and then try to adjust the handle of the whip to try to figure out still how to make that snap or that crack of the whip. So once I started seeing that, it was pretty amazing because it was starting to change the timing of where the body was at the point of foot contact. So now where I had a long arm action, I'd have typically that guy's head far forward, his glove already rotated, his shoulders already over-rotated, and he couldn't lead leg block very well. And you could do anything you want. You can put assessment on his hip mobility or his strength in his legs. You could try all that, and it wouldn't work because he was so off time. So by timing him, all of a sudden his body lined up better. And the really way to see this isn't by watching major leaguers, really. Honestly, those guys are strong enough to do a lot of things wrong and still get it right for a certain amount of time. But when you have a younger kid who's not as strong yet and you put him in the right positions, it's an incredible change in his ability to perform. It is absolutely night and day. And
does he need to get strong in those particular areas before he can do that? Or is it, can you do it without it?
So you could definitely do it without it first. Ideally, you do it all together. But who when you're young, you start developing patterns. Whether that's by watching your dad's crazy throwing pattern, throwing it back to you because he's never played, or you've had a coach that's trained you in a ball dominant way, or you just never knew and you threw. Yeah. And so when that starts to happen, that's that muscle memory, that's that repetitiveness. And now you're ingrained in that. So that's before strength has even happened for you. You're just creating this pattern that you know you have no idea. So what happens now is strength starts to come up because you're getting older or you're actually starting to lift and work out. But the arm path won't change just because you're getting stronger. That stayed the same unless you get taught something different out of it. So by creating a foundation of movement first, natural, like a shortstop. And again, I go back to shortstops a lot because they don't have a bunch of throwing coaches. They don't have a bunch of throwing drills at camps. Really, all they're doing is a ton of ground ball work. They're moving their body different ways, whether it's falling on their backside and throwing the ball, or running up and throwing the ball, or trying to turn their body quick. The one thing that always is consistent, no matter where their body's going, is the arm path. The arm path tends to sequence up the way it should to be most efficient without them thinking about it, because their body's in non-efficient places, either, you know, running backwards or jumping or anything like that. So it's always what I paid attention to. So I thought, when these really good throwers, no matter where their body goes, they tend to do the same exact thing with their arm path. So that's kind of the foundation of it. So when you give an outfielder these cues to get long, or you see, or a kid who's never even been taught, yeah, I can fix that arm path. And then what ends up happening is, that's part of it. That's not the only part now. Now I got to strengthen him. Now I also got to teach him about his lower half and his hips. But if I try to do it, which I used to do it in reverse. I'd go, hey, your glove's flying open. Hey, your landing is flying open. Your ankle's turned out. Your weight's too far forward. All these different things. But I realized if I didn't, that wouldn't fix the arm path. So that would maybe temporarily fix where his body position was, but then he'd still have these big holes in his arm. So by teaching the arm path first, it's just a checkoff. So if you looked at the whole, you know, lifespan of me coaching a player, and I've taken a lot of them from little league and they're in the big leagues now, there's probably about a 10% time where we taught just his arm path. And then there was like this huge 90%, which was strength and mental and lower half and landing and pitch selection and pitch grips and all these different things. But if I would have done it the opposite way, I'd had a tough time getting to that point, or even probably wouldn't even get into the big leagues, because throwing is, it's, you know, baseball is the only sport you can have a season, in, say, you know, career ending injury without being touched. Mm. And, you know, I say this all the time. If you have a car and you're in a race and your engine, you keep getting stronger, but the wheels are slightly turned in funky directions or whatever it may be, just off, you can keep getting your engine stronger, but you're going to be the first one in the pits every time, because the tire is going to wear down, just like my shoulder did when I pitched.
You know, you mentioned the shortstops. I was curious about this. And again, I'm just going off the top of my head thinking a shortstop. I'm wondering about the correlation between the shortstop's got to get rid of the ball fairly quick, and maybe a stride would be, you know, a little shorter than most pitchers. What's the correlation between the pitcher's stride and his arm path? Does that change anything?
Yeah, 100%. So my theory then had always been, okay, well, if the shortstop is always throwing with this sequence, if he's got a short stride, he's going to have his arm in the right position for his hips to rotate to get the ball with velocity and accuracy on it. So at a short stride, he does that more often than anything. But if you put him onto the mound, the only thing that's going to change is the stride length. But what ends up happening is his timing internally, because he's thrown so many reps that way, he never has to think about this, and this is why he converts to be a pitcher so quickly, is that he knows how to time, wait for his arm, or lengthen it slightly, but he keeps the same sequence and he keeps the same timing. And any variation of that, if he didn't do it right, then he would be easy to correct, because he wouldn't be, I mean, if a coach, which happens a lot, you have this great shortstop who's your stud, you pitch, he pitches one inning and you're like, wow, this guy could be a pitcher. So then he starts working with the pitching coach. And now the pitching coach is like, yes, you got to get length. You got to get this arm to breathe a little bit. And all of a sudden now he's not that great anymore. And you took away what he naturally had, which was his instincts. And how did he get his instincts? From thousands and thousands of balls where he never was taught. He was just taught, get the ball accurately, get it there quick. And what does the body do? It times up and it sequences up really naturally.
Love it. Love hearing that. You know, and I was just thinking, as you said that, I got a good friend for MLB who runs the academy in Brazil. They've taken 10 or 15 players that were non-pitchers, put them in the pitchers. These guys have been drafted. It's incredible how they've taken position players. Now, that arm path, through all your experience, because, again, you know, you've had kids that are young that have made it all the way to the big leagues. Through your experience working with all these young kids, do you see that their arm path is wrong right away, the majority of them, or is it just some? What's the kind of percentage that you're seeing that the arm path needs to be corrected?
It's a big number. It's probably 3 out of 4 guys that come in, for sure.
Wow.
It's huge. And here's the thing about it too, and it's not any fault of a coach, what I'm about to say, because I used to teach this the way I'm going to describe this, because we all used to, and it's a ball dominant thing where we have the cobra drill, or, you know, I'll do it left hand so you can see me. So we have the arm in the right position. We have the body in the right position. Boom, we're ready to go right there. So you'd see this drill quite often for Little League and getting the elbow up and all the right reasons. The problem that I noticed is with all these arms being in such poor positions, or deliveries being in such poor ways, I started to kind of figure out, like, let's go keep going back and let's strip down some layers and see when does this all start? Is it just from a dad that doesn't have a really good mechanic and he's just mimicking him? Or is it something that's ingrained in coaches to teach this one exact way? And I thought that's the one drill that I see often. And the reason why we do this drill, and I did it too, is because when we see a baseball card or a magazine, we see that. And oftentimes we stop the delivery and you see an arm. Yeah, right there.
Oh, here?
Yes, right there. Yeah, that arm in the cock position, right? And that's from a baseball card or magazine or anything. The problem that I had was that wasn't a stationary position. That was a camera that took a shot of Nolan Ryan, of Roger Clemens, of all these amazing 100-mile-an-hour arms. And that motion at that moment is a blur when it goes through. So what ends up happening, though, as we do all these drills, is that the young athlete, he just wants to get the ball to that position. So he'll bypass the actual pattern that those guys took to get there, and he'll just take a shortcut there. So then that's when you'll see a kid that just takes the ball directly to that position, and then he's so off sequence that he'll drop his elbow and push the ball. Yeah. So instead of that, what we would do, and this is what the pocket path belt and sleeve does in the shirt, is if you imagine putting your hand on your side or on your belly, and you're just kind of resting your palm on your belly, just kind of relaxing. And then all you did is you turned your fingers on top, and then you slid your arm up with your elbow first and your ball following, and then your hips rotated, then the arm laid back. You'd have the shortstop taking the ball into his belly, turning and throwing. Mm-hmm. Right. That's just what that would be. So when I thought about how do we kind of train this? That's why we call it the pocket, is that I had a ball in my pocket one day as I was looking at shortstops and quarterbacks and really long career pitchers. And I took, someone overthrew a ball. So I had a ball in my front pocket and I just took it out one real quick and I threw the ball. And I went, wow, I just threw that ball like 120 feet and it felt really good. And I realized with my hand in the pocket, in my front pocket, I could only take it out one way and throw the ball. And in one fluid motion. And then that hit me like, oh, okay, I'm just call this arm action the pocket. Then I had one of my lessons, who is a really good kind of entrepreneur guy, played in Japan, has a son that I was working with. And he was listening to me teach. And this guy has coached Little League All-Stars forever in his local area. And he was listening to me teach his son how not to take the ball directly to that position, but to take it in one fluid motion that was sequenced with his hips. And he was like, wow, I've never heard that, but it made a lot of sense to him. So he was thinking after months of seeing his kid just continue to get better. And then he was actually playing in Sunday league games. So he kept playing and he was throwing and he hadn't thrown any, but he's throwing like he was 20 years ago and he's 60 and he's playing in the Sunday league. So he's really interested. So he says, hey, I got an idea. Have you ever thought about anything that, you kids can kind of have something to teach them when you're not trying to teach them? Because we've all been there. We teach one kid, got him right, you turn your back and he starts doing it wrong again.
Yep.
You're like, or you get lessons after lessons and you go home and, you get him right. And then he goes home and then mom, dad can't check on him to make sure he's doing it right. So he's probably not practicing. So you come back, you do the same thing over again. You're just wasting a ton of money. So he came up thinking about a shirt that had pockets built into the shirt. And I was like, man, that's something I was thinking about kind of similar to that. And so we started, I said, I think that'll work. And then when I started thinking about like a quarterback who has that cold weather pouch in his front of his, in his belly, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
So I was thinking one day, I was like, man, if he had a baseball in there and you asked him to take it out of there quickly and throw it, he would have to take it out one way. And I was like, that's it. We can make a sleeve. And we did, we made a sleeve with a Velcro attachment to a belt. And then we have a shirt coming out that's going to be even cooler for the little peewee guys that can attach anywhere it's comfortable for any thrower, tall, short, older. I mean, we have big leaguers on this thing. We've had little teeny guys doing it. It's amazing. And you can put that belt right, or you put the sleeve on your forearm. It lightly Velcro touches to the belt, stays there, and you just let your arm smoothly come out. It's been incredible the way it so simple, but so effective.
If we're going to look at certain pitchers, and folks on Facebook or even on YouTube, Pocket Pat's coming out soon. It's pocketpat.com. Also, pfbbaseball.com. Check out both websites. I'm thinking of some of the older pitchers. Nolan Ryan seemed to have that arm action you're talking about. Ron Guidry, yep. I believe, seemed to have that.
Yep.
You've always heard about the 10,000 rule theory. You know, you got to do it 10,000 times correctly before and all that. What's been your experience? How long does it take somebody? I know everybody's individualized, but have you seen guys pick it up within a week or a few days? Yeah. Or
that's the beauty of this thing.
My apologies. Yeah, what I meant was more, and I know you're probably going to reference it in a game because you can do it in practice, but if it doesn't transfer into a game, it's not going to help.
I'll definitely touch on both of those. So the initial put it on for the very first time and try it is an absolute eye-boggling moment. And I've seen it a million times because I had Dave Roberts doing it in his backyard with his kid one day. And he calls up Mark Pryor and says, Mark, you got to see this thing. And he goes, Dave, can you drive down to Mark's and show him it too? So I drove down and showed him. And that's how blown away they were of it, because it literally, that first moment you put it on and you let your arm go through it, it just feels effortless, stress-free, and relaxed. And you're going, how did I not learn to throw like this ever in my life? Wow. And so it is instant like that. Now, to master it, it can be completely different. You know, it takes time. So I always say we have a plyo ball drills that go with it. So you first will master those. That won't take long because there's no stress. You're just throwing to the ball a wall. There's no kind of nervousness. There's no anxiety. So usually athletes really respond well with that. And that's what's nice about having something like this is you're able to take away the pressure and just kind of get comfortable with it, learn about it, self-discover a little more. Where like you see coaches in pro ball do this constantly forever. They have a guy with a funky arm delivery. So what do? They take him to shortstop. We've all done it. Hit him ground balls. He throws beautifully. And the coach is like, wow, just do that in the game. But then he goes in the game, he doesn't do it.
Right.
Because you haven't given him a plan or drills that are specifically for him. And you don't give him enough time to actually make these changes. So with the pocket path and the drills and the programs that come with it, you're going to get time to take those and make those changes. So I've seen people completely come a week later and be completely different. I've seen guys take 2 years to do it. Yeah. It just depends on how motivated they are. I would say the older they are or the more self-motivated they are, if they're workers, they'll get it quick. If they're, you know, just kind of playing because mom, dad want them to play, it's probably going to take some time, but it'll be a difference initially for sure. And the younger the athletes get it, I mean, we have kids in here like 9, 10 years old that when you walk in, we have pro guys walking in going, oh my God, if I could throw that good right there. So that happens.
Yeah. And I would think, you know, obviously the younger you can get them, the less issues they have early on. I mean, you get a guy that's older, it may take them a little longer. I mean, you bring that to Japan, they'll, you know, as disciplined as they are, in 2 days they might have that down pat.
Right. You know, that's 100%.
Two things from this. One, obviously, because of the right movement, you call them movement patterns.
Mm-hmm.
One, it's got to reduce the ability to get hurt has to be lower. And two, not that you're promoting this, but you know, because again, that proper movement, I would think you'd have to also, you're going to see some increase in velocity too, because of that.
Yeah. So my big goal, first of all, doing this was for arm health. And just visually, you can just tell like that's a better way to throw, right? Than some guy that's behind you stabbing and doing all these other funky stuff. So that was checked off the box. What was cool though, as we were doing that, we were seeing higher velocity and better accuracy. And it was across the board. It wasn't just a few times. And with higher velocity, though, the ironic part is, though, there's more stress. So that's why it becomes very important as you're getting more velocity as a young athlete to make sure you're doing your strength exercises, your band work, your core work, your leg work, all the stuff that incorporated. Because the harder you throw, exponentially, the stress comes higher. So, are you going to throw harder instantly with this thing? I guarantee it. I see it all the time. Are you going to throw more accurately? Yes. Are you going to have to take care of your arm? Of course you are, right? So, you know, someone throwing 65 miles an hour probably never have an arm soreness. Someone throwing 85 miles an hour, going to have some arm soreness if you don't take care of it. So, yeah, there's a trade-off.
You know, let's go to Facebook real quick, and I'll tell you why. Because they, what I'd like for you to do, and I know it's not easy on the podcast, but folks, just show the arm path you're talking about. Because here's a question. It says, Jacob, listen up. Is he saying short arm path by the ear is good for pitchers? He's not saying bring the ball from here to here. But go ahead and demonstrate it, because then they can go to YouTube. David's going to demonstrate it. Go to YouTube, Peter Caliendo. You can see this part.
Yeah. And also later, if you guys, some of your viewers, follow my Instagram, The Pocket Path, or you can follow me at PFA Baseball, and you'll see a ton of explanations on all these things. So here's a good arm path. Here's that relax. We have four positions we talk about. The zero position is just neutral. It's relaxed. So think of the stretch position, or think of the ball coming in as a ground ball to a infielder, or that outfielder taking the ball from front and running. Okay, so zero position. The one position, very important, all these positions are very important, is going to be the turning of the hand to get your fingers on top. And notice as I'm starting to initiate the break or the ball movement from my glove. Okay, for our sleeve purposes, you would see us in the sleeve here. Should have brought one of the sleeves up, but I turn and I pull. So now my fingers are on top. Now, the reason that movement of my fingers is very important is, if you notice when I did that, my elbow and my arm get away from my rib cage. All right. So when I'm away from my rib cage, now I can kind of move freely here. So now I'm going to get into the most important position we talk about here. And this is the two position. So this is really, you know, you see this everywhere. The two position is where my arm, my elbow now is at shoulder height. Okay. The ball is relaxed. So I'm not in this position cranking my elbow down just to get my ball up. Mm-hmm. All I'm doing is just taking a 0-1-2 position. Now, here's where it's
important. Is that a foot strike right there?
So this is almost a foot strike. So we're kind of in a flow. So I'm stepping towards the target. Okay. And here I am. So at foot strike. So right before that, though, what's happening is my hips are starting to open up. Okay. Mm. So as I get close to, and this would be our three position, is actually nothing to do with the arm. It has to do with the hips. But if you notice when I'm doing this, my arm is relaxed and it's not moving yet. I don't need it to, because the type of torque that I'm creating is going to make this action happen on its own. I don't want to force that action. So forcing it would be trying to force it into my ear too aggressively, mm-hmm. or force it back into layback. And then now we're going to be in big trouble, because now we're going to really get long behind us and get a lot of pressure onto that arm. So all I'm doing is just keeping it at two. And now I'm going hips. And then I throw. So all in sequence in a smooth motion would be 0-1-2-3-4. So you can see how my hips are doing 0-1-2 hips.
Yeah.
And throw. Right? So it's a normal ground ball. It's a normal pitcher. And how calm I'm leaving this. I'm not trying to be, I don't want to muscle. So the nice part about the sleeve is it'll tell you all that. With the sleeve on your hand in the sleeve, if I try to be muscly and pull out, then it would pull off the belt or get stuck. Or if I tried to wrap my wrist, turn my wrist, stab, it'll catch that. Mm. So it allows you to relax your arm and just let everything else work for you. And that's the beauty of it. That's what's been so successful about it.
Love it. Love it, folks. And, you know, check it out. You can see it on the video. You can go to Instagram, PFA Baseball or Pocket Path. On Instagram again, or you can go also YouTube, check out our channel. Check our channel anyways, because there's over 100 shows there. Don't forget to subscribe at it. Thanks for your questions. And sometimes I know it's tough on a podcast, but I think that was great. That was a good way to demonstrate. So now when we're talking about pitchers, they could be doing this every day working with the pocket path.
Right. So yeah, the one thing I stress a lot is to have pitchers have hitters' hats. Hitters are so good at having a step-by-step process. They get to the field, they go T-work, front toss, soft toss, dry swings, cage, coach throwing BP, and then finally they go into actually playing. So there's behind me, Jeremy. How you doing? So what I want to get these pitchers doing on a podcast here. This is Jeremy. He's the
You're
co-founder.
Good. How you doing, Jeremy? No problem. Everybody's welcome.
All right on. So the idea is the pitcher to have ability to go home or before practice starts, before the game starts, hit in the weight room, go home to in the garage and be able to do dry reps. So the dry reps I encourage guys to do 20 to 25 a day with the belt on, just to kind of get that arm sequence and the hip sequence with it. Every other day, there's a in our program, there's some plyo ball drills that will have to reinforce this with the throwing. And then a lot of guys will like to take this with the baseball in it too and do baseball throws with it on. The beauty of it is it's so easy to attach. And then once you got the feeling of it, you can take the belt, the sleeve off, leaving the belt, and just pretend like you still have it in there. And then that now it's ingrained. And you don't even need to have it on all the time. You can just actually catch. Because one of my pet peeves is they get on the belt, they do these things amazing, they're feeling great. And then their first instinct, because they've been doing this forever, is they go out to play catch, and then they're just bad habits, lobbing the ball, pushing the ball, not really thinking about it. Yet you see on the other side of the field all the infielders, and they're just catching, boom, boom. They're just throwing, getting hitting the guys in the chest. The pitchers are all running around trying to catch balls because they're trying to be all slow and long and unathletic. I want to encourage that athletic throwing for them.
What's great is that with the pocket path, you've got all the drills that go along with it kind of help the process. Now, we know, and I'm sure you want to encourage when coaches are working with kids with this or even parents, that, you know, you're going to put it on, you're going to work on it for a week, but then you're going to go out and play catch, and you're not going to do it right away. You got to have patience to stay with it and keep doing it constantly, right? And then that's go ahead and answer that one to make sure.
Yeah, you said it right in the beginning of the show. You want things that you want habits for long-term success. And this is one of those things. And Earl Hershiser saw this too. And he was blown away by it. He goes, oh my God, I would have that in my baseball bag. And the first thing I do when I go out to the field would be to do some dry reps to get my mind right, get the feel right. And then I'd have it at home by my bed and I'd take it out. And then before bed, just like a hitter taking swings, I would take that and I would just go through my delivery and just work on that muscle memory and that repetitiveness. And I think that's the way you are able to continue, not just getting better right away, but then continue, because baseball, as you grow and you get stronger, there's so many different variables that can change that you have to keep up with. And the one thing that you can keep up with is your timing. That doesn't change no matter if I'm 6'5 or if I'm 5'5. You know, I need to have that same timing of where my hips turn my arm in the right position at foot strike.
Dave, can you take this then, you know, progress to, you know, throw into a catcher at half the distance and then working your way back by using the pocket path?
Yeah, and the neat part is you can kind of do whatever you want, however you want. But, yeah, we have done that. I tend to probably put 90% of my time just in doing plyo balls, light catch work, because I like to get them off of it as quick as I can. I want them to feel like they can put their arm in the same exact position. That's not going to go away. But I want them to know when they get the baseball in their hand, I don't need them to put it into the sleeve. I actually want them to put it next to the sleeve if we want. So I really, what I would do transition-wise is I would do the dry work first. That doesn't take long. Then I do the plyo ball work into the wall. And then we'd go out with the baseball in our hand. And I wouldn't necessarily put it into the sleeve all the time. Maybe one time in the sleeve, then three times out of the sleeve, but in the same position, just on the outside of it. So that way they can kind of get the same feeling and positioning.
But also, when they're playing catch, from a mental perspective, you want them to think of what they're doing with their arm path. So that kind of correlates, because you can stay consistent with it.
Right. Yeah. And that's the nice part about it. Psychologists have said that there's internal focus versus external focus. External focus being if there's something that's kind of forcing, maybe the wrong word, but something that's helping you do a position. Like if I told that kid, hey, I need you to do this pattern, and I just showed it to him, and I said, go ahead and do it. He wouldn't be able to do it as well if I said, hey, you're going to do this pattern, but by putting your hand in the sleeve, it's going to help you do it. And then they would nail it every single time. So if you create that external cue for somebody, and this is what's neat about the product, is that there's, like you said earlier, there is nothing like it out there. There just really isn't. And that's unique in the world of baseball, because, you know, we've been playing baseball for quite some time, and the arm path has been a topic of discussion for a long time, but nothing has come along this simple and this effective, I don't think, ever.
No, especially that, you know, baseball, you know, especially in the last 10 years, has really progressed technology-wise, man. It's exploded. You know, it was so old-fashioned, archaic for many years that people just did it the way they always did it before and didn't worry about how, you know, are we doing it the right way. But here's the other part. So if we're looking, you know, I know you said not to look at major league guys all the time, but if we're looking on television, we're seeing a guy throw 98, and not that I'm stressing just velocity, but throwing 98, but he's got a long arm path. What's Dave, if Dave was the major, if he was Mark Pryor with the Dodgers, is Dave going to look at a guy like that in the offseason and try to change that arm path, even though he's successful?
I would. I know it sounds crazy, but
And why also? Why?
Yeah, for sure. Well, okay, so it goes back to how I started to get here in the first place a long time ago. I wanted to look at pitching and say, what can I teach as a foundational thing for kids? And so I said, well, let's look at what the big leaguers do. And if we looked at the big leaguers and we went to spring training day one, we saw as many pitchers as you possibly could have. Everybody's throwing an inning. There's lots of innings going on. Then what would happen is, like, we'd look at it and go, my God, I don't know what the heck is the same. There's so many different ways of doing it. There's guys with long gloves. There's guys with short gloves. There's guys with long arms. There's guys with wrapping. There's guys all fat, tall, skinny, short, boom, everywhere, right? And I said to myself, how do I narrow this down? And I thought to myself, well, why don't I get rid of relievers? And here's why I say get rid of relievers for this experiment, is that we become relievers as pitchers for negative reasons. There's hardly ever positive reasons why, you know, you don't take a guy that throws four pitches for strikes. He stays healthy all year long. He throws hard from the first to the ninth inning. He gets lefties out. He gets righties out. He has multiple pitches that are nasty. Hey, I think you're going to be a really good bullpen guy. Like, nobody says that, right? So that was easy then. That made sense. Doesn't mean there's not good bullpen throwers in there. It just means I needed to kind of clear some, right? Mm-hmm. So now you're left with starting pitchers. And unless it's your favorite team, you probably don't know the 3, 4, 5 starters on all the teams in the league. But who you really know the names are the 1 and 2 starters of almost every team. Why do we know those guys' names? Because of longevity of success. Mm. That means they have to stay healthy. That means they have to do all those things I just listed before. When I looked at those, that's a small category now. Now I looked at them and they don't look that different anymore. Now there's a ton of similarities, starting with their arm path sequencing and the way that they deliver the ball being not so max effort in the beginning, but max effort at the right time. So they were able to sequence a lot more effectively when you're not trying to max effort, put tension into it early. So that's really where it came down to. And then the other side, a side note, was a lot of those guys, especially the my generation and below, is they were shortstops when they were younger. They were quarterbacks when they were younger. So these two positions were exactly the positions I was studying as good arm habits and good throwing habits. So it kind of came together almost perfectly when I decided to look at it that way, rather than just look at, like most people say, oh, well, look at this guy. He is how do you explain him? Mm. You know, he's probably not going to play for 10 years and he's not going to be a starter. He's not going to make a bunch of money. So to me, that was the easy way for me to kind of squash that argument.
Great stuff. Love it. Now, I'm assuming that you also stress long toss. Does that make a difference when they're starting to long toss with their arm path? Does it change anything?
It does change a little bit. Not a whole lot. That's the idea, is that the shorter your distance is, maybe the little bit shorter the arm path is, the longer the distance gets, it can get a little longer, but never change the right sequence. So and when we long toss with the pocket on, it's beautiful because what ends up happening is their shoulders tilt, which almost lets that ball kind of drop out, but it's in the same position. And then I time with that whip, right? Yeah. So that's what would happen on the mound as well. So that long toss positioning is very similar to how you generate power in that short space on the mound as well. So that's where you can tie all these things in. In between that is a lot of athletic throwing and a lot of maybe jumping and moving and doing quarterback drills, shortstop drills. We have a ton of fun names with all our drills. Sure.
And, you know, if you look at major league players, because that's the ones we can look at right now, Giolito would probably be the main guy that really has shown great success and made that change.
Yeah, there's quite a few that you'd be surprised have done it. He's pretty extreme on the how far he's shortened up.
Bauer always like that?
Bauer's a shorter one too. One of the pitchers that I'm known for working with for a long time is Joe Kelly. If you look at some pictures of him with the Cardinals, he's really, really long. And then he's much, much obviously shorter now. And I always caution people that pocket path is an idea of being sequenced, most likely getting shorter. So it's not get short, it's get shorter mostly. That's usually what it is. And that's what it helps with so much for. It's just getting that nice natural stroke where it's really relaxed. Shane Bieber is one of my favorite deliveries there is in the big leagues. It's clean, it's effortless, it's tension-free. It's a delivery that a lot of kids can learn. It's not a really quick Lucas Giolito one. It's more of a short, compact sequence one. If I'm a major league team, I'm I'm looking at players who I'm developing or scouting that might not look like that. And I'm going to find out how I can teach him to be like that, so I can make sure that he becomes a starter and not a flash in the pan reliever with a big arm and bunch of injuries.
You know, not that we need to get into this, but my memory bank, I'm looking at this and thinking, you know, as a catcher, you know, we never taught bring it here. We always taught bring the elbow back and up. So it's very similar to that. They might have a little shorter arc, I guess, but it seems right. Similar.
Absolutely. Short. And I do mention always catchers are really one of the best ones to look at as well. And it's funny, since I launched this about a month ago now, the amount of catching coaches who have reached out and bought this from me off my Instagram has been crazy. Like that I didn't see coming, but it made sense. You know,
first guy comes to my mind right away is Nola, who went to the Padres, who was a shortstop in college, and then became a catcher and pretty good catcher, you know, not just blocking, but a pretty good thrower too. Listen, Dave, you've been great. We're getting close today. I'm going to ask a couple more things, but I don't want to misrepresent any of this. I want to make sure that you get out exactly what you wanted to say about the sequencing. Did we cover what you wanted to cover? Is there anything else you want to add in there?
No, we did. We covered. The only thing I want to make sure is that, you know, when you're looking for where you can find me in the Pocket Path, the website will be up. It's called thepocketpath.com very shortly, probably by end of the week. But you can still purchase them through my Instagram. Just DM me and I'll give you the details on how to get the programs, the videos, and you can search Dave Coggin under the Instagram search, or PFA Baseball 1 or the Pocket Path.
And folks, we're going to put all that in the show notes. Plus, what I do is I'll take clips of Dave, certain 1 minute, 2 minute clips, put them on social media, copy Dave, and also make sure that you know how to get a hold of them and go to the website. So we'll take care of all that. Hey, as we close off a little bit here, we'll get away from the past, because I think we hit that pretty good.
Yeah.
But I ask this to a lot of people because I'm really concerned. You know, I've been in the game 38 years and I've always stressed the lower levels, because to me, everything starts there. The coaching, the players, everything. If you're going to keep players in the game longer, it starts there, and you got to keep them in, you know, along the way. What would you change when it comes to pitching the game? And it could be maybe something in the mechanics also, but something that you would change at the younger levels to make sure that our kids are long-term developing better. Any changes? If you were in total control.
Yeah. I mean, you know, not to say that, you know, not to push my product here, but nothing's more important, I think, to a kid than how to throw properly. You know, you can make an error and everybody makes an error. You're not going to be laughed at. It's going to happen. It happens all the time. You can strike out. You're not going to be laughed at. Happens all the time. You get another at bat. But the second you throw poorly and you have all kinds of wacky things in your throwing motion, and you can't throw accurately, you can't throw hard enough, you're probably going to be so discouraged that you're going to leave this amazing game so quickly that you'll never have a chance to maybe make an adjustment that could have made a huge difference, and maybe you enjoyed the game longer and played longer. Whether you got to the big leagues or played high school or college baseball, I don't think it's that big a deal. I think it's more about enjoying it as a young athlete and getting outside and playing. And nothing's more important or devastating to the longevity than a poor arm path.
Yeah, you know what? To me, that's a grand slam, and I'll tell you why. Because, you know, if you can't throw and, you know, playing the game of baseball, you're going to struggle along the way. And safety's a big issue. So now if everybody, you know, so we're not even talking about pitchers. If everybody was using the product and using the drills, all young kids would be much better. And they'd have a lot more fun because, like you said, you're going to be a little more successful when you throw that ball, because you're the only one. When you throw it away, everybody's looking at you. And then that becomes a mental thing also.
Yeah. I totally agree with that, 100%.
All right, Dave. Awesome, man. I really appreciate it. You've given us some great stuff here. We'll make sure we put everything on the show notes. Want to wish you the best of luck with your facilities, brand new facilities there. But anything else you want to close off for our coaches, players, or parents around the world? Any last-minute advice?
Be an athlete. Throw like one. That's it.
There you go. And play multiple sports. That we want to stress that, folks. Multiple sports. Do it because it helps you. Remember, you're also, you know, I see the travel teams playing all these games. They play over 100 games. And I'm all for games. But remember, we look at the best countries in the world, even ourselves. The best ones practice more than they play, especially at the young levels. As they get older, that pyramid changes a little bit and they start playing a little bit more games. I'm not saying you don't have to play games, But take a couple months off, play some other sports, have some fun doing some other things, be kids. Right now, hey, Dave, I do close off with this. One thing during the pandemic, what I've seen, I just get your opinion on this. I ride my bike a lot. Now I'm seeing kids, and you're younger than I am, but I'm seeing kids playing on their own. I've actually seen them draw a box on the school wall, you know, and play baseball that way. I've seen them play wiffle ball, doing things on their own where coaches aren't around. And sometimes that's the best way to learn.
I've seen that as well, and I love it. That's exactly what I used to do, 100%.
Yeah. All right, folks, we're going to close it off. That's Dave Coggin. Dave, thanks so much, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
All right, special thanks to Dave Coggin. Special thanks to our producer, Brian Crock, with the Lineup Media Group. Special thanks to everybody in the U.S. and around the world. I want to thank you for joining us. Don't forget, please join us on YouTube at Peter Caliendo. Subscribe, hit the little button that looks like a bell. That helps us get the show out. We really appreciate it. Don't forget the audio goes on baseballoutsidethebox.com. And special thanks also to Mac Pachoric, my buddy in California, great baseball coach. Don't forget, Caliendo Sports heading to Dominican Republic. Christmas break, December 26th to 31st, we're taking a team of 16, 15, 14-year-old players who want to train with the Dominican players, want to compete against them. It's going to be a lot of fun. Parents go. It's a cultural experience also, but we get a lot of baseball training and a lot of competition. But remember, baseball training is number one. That's what we love to do. So, folks, thanks for joining us. Remember, it is the show that loves to interview baseball's best coaching minds that love the challenge, the status quo. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Stay safe. God bless you. Get back on the field soon. Follow the rules, and we'll see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.